So this Shabbos, Bez Hashem, we read the Parshas Shoftim, and in Parshas Shoftim we have some famous.
Tab.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, can you hear me? Okay. In Parshas Shoftim, we have some famous psukim relating to the right or the authority of the Rabbanon to offer legislation, to present laws to the Rabbanon, and so on. That's a big subject by itself. But one of the things we find, an unusual statement, which requires some sort of analysis because it seems to go against logic, and even it seems to go against something the Mishnah tells us. The Torah tells us that we are required to listen to the Rabbanan, and it says, Lo Sosser, do not veer or deviate from what the Chachamim tell us, Yamin Usmol. You don't even, do not deviate to the right, don't stray either to the right or left. Lo Sosser, and Adobar Shigil Lecha, Yamin Usmol. Don't even move to the right or to the left. So the question becomes, well, what do you mean to the right or to the left? So the Sifrei makes a comment. The Sifrei is the Medrash Halacha on Chumash, Bamidbar, and Dvarim. Every Sefer in Chumash has, except for Bereishis, because there are no mitzvahs in Bereishis, but every Sefer, other four Svarim in Chumash, have a Midrashic commentary, Medrash Halacha, as opposed to Medrash Agada. Medrash Agada, usually when we think about Medrash being agadic material, stories, lessons, and so on and so forth, and that's certainly one form of Medrash, but another form of Medrash is we call Medrash Halacha, which reads very much like the Mishnayos and Gemara, many of the same speakers and as in the Mishnayos and the Gemara. And the Sefer Shmos, the primary Medrash Halacha is known as the Mechilta. And the Sefer Vayikra, the primary Medrash Halacha is called the Sifra, the Torah's Kohanim, same thing. Sifra is simply Aramaic for Ha Sefer, the book, is one book, Vayikra, as opposed to the Sifrei, which is on two books, means Sfarim, Sifrei is a plural, it's on the book of Bamidbar and Devarim together. So the Sifrei in Devarim, on this pasuk, which Rashi quotes in Chumash, Rashi quotes here in Parsha Shoftim, it says Yamin u'smol afilu omrim lecha al yamin shehu smol al smol shehu yamin. We have to listen to the Rabbanan, even if the rabbis, even if they tell us that what's right is left and what's left is right. And even if they tell us something which we think is completely backwards, an obvious mistake, they tell me right is left and left is right. Apparently, we have to listen to their psak in their direction anyway. The problem is that, and that's the idea behind that is that apparently authority is binding even when an error. I remember when we were in high school, we had to read the Cain Mutiny. I don't know if that's too popular in high school nowadays, but the Cain Mutiny by Herman Wouk. So the Cain Mutiny, his main theme there is the question of whether authority is binding even when an error. The captain and so on issued certain orders. Those remember the story. But in any event, he mentions Herman Wouk was a knowledgeable Jew. And I think he taught in YU for some time. In any event, when he taught that book, The Cain Mutiny, I think he writes in the introduction that it's based on this theme of authority being binding even when it's an error is based on this Rashi, which in itself is based on the Sifrei. Even if they tell you right is left is right, you have to listen to the authority. But the Ramban and Chumash here in Parsha Shoftim notes that it can't be that what it means, because there is a Mishnah in Maseches Horius. Maseches Horius begins by discussing what happens when the Bezdin HaGadol makes an error. The Bezdin makes a mistake. Sometimes the Bezdin issue a ruling, and the Mishnah states that if somebody listened to the Bezdin, assuming the Bezdin must be correct, okay, and people listened and they did what the Bezdin said, then it turned out later the Bezdin made a mistake. And so first of all, you see the Bezdin can make a mistake. And second of all, you can't blame the people. They just listened. They assumed that the Bezdin was telling them that the Bezdin was saying that which was correct. So if the Bezdin says a certain ruling, a certain psak halacha, and people thought that, okay, the Bezdin must be right, and therefore they behaved accordingly, and it turned out it was an aver. So it's an aver b'shogeg, certainly. Nobody did anything but maze. It was an aver b'shogeg. Turns out they made a mistake. So they have to be, usually when there's an aver committed b'shogeg, you have to bring a korban chatos. But here, since the individual people did what they did in error based on what the Bezdin ruled, so then the individuals do not have to bring a korban chatos for their mistake. Rather, the Bezdin has to bring a special korban. It's called the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur, described at the beginning of Chumash Vayikra. And that's what the Mishnah says when Bezdin makes a mistake. So they have to be, and they caused lots of people to do an aver again, b'shogeg, because they thought the Bezin was right. So the people who listened to the Bezin, assuming they were correct, so they don't have to bring a private carbon chat. It's just the Bezin has to bring a carbon parallel and double shul tzibur. However, if somebody within the Bezin or somebody knew that the Bezin was wrong, they realized it was wrong. Okay, the Bezin was making a mistake. The ruling was incorrect. Okay, so if he knew that the ruling was incorrect, then he shouldn't have listened to the Bezin. That's what it implies from the Mishnah. He shouldn't listen to the Bezin. He knows that they're mistaken. He has the facts, he has the information, he realizes the Bezin has made an error. So if he goes ahead and acts in accordance with the rule of the ruling of the Bezin, knowing that the Bezin is incorrect, so then he has to bring his own carbon chattas because he made a mistake. You know, again, he did it for shogi, but he shouldn't have listened to the Bezin. He's not covered by the carbon that the Bezin brings the pile of the Shalti because he knew that they were not correct, and therefore he's responsible for his own behavior. Rav Shechter likes to give the example. Somebody knows about a certain product that it's not kosher. He has some inside information, but there's a hashkoch on the, there's a, whatever the symbol is on the wrapper or on the package. So he's not allowed to say, well, listen, I mean, I know that it's not correct. I know there was a mistake was made in this labeling. Sometimes there are mistakes. Every once in a while, you get a letter from the shul that it was mislabeled or something like that, but it was some mistake that happened. So if you know about the mistake, you know that it's not kosher. You can't say, well, but I'm just going to, you know, it's the fault of the kosher agency. They should have been more careful. It's their supervisor made a mistake. I don't have to worry about it. I can eat it. No, you're not allowed to eat it. If you know that it's a mistake, you're not allowed to say, well, if I don't know anything about this company or this product and I see the acceptable hashgacha on the box and then I eat the product and it turns out that it's non-kosher. Okay, so that's an aver b'shogeg I made, but I assumed that it was a reliable hashgacha. And it's not my place necessarily to know that they made a mistake. So therefore, that's not my private aver, that's their mistake. But if somebody knows, someone has the information and knows that there was a problem with this run or with this product or whatever, then he's not allowed to say, well, I'm going to just pass the buck and blame the kashrus agency. He knew about it. So the Ramban discusses, this seems to be in contradiction. This ruling of the first mission, Maseches Horos, seems to be in opposition to that sifrei over here that Rashi quotes, that you have to listen to the Bezin, lo sosim and adover, shigil cho, yominu small. You have to listen to them whether they say right is left is right. You have to listen no matter what. We see from the Mishnah Torah, it's not true. If you know that right is right and left is left, you're not allowed to listen to them. So we have a bit of a contradiction. Okay, so there are some who hold that it's not a contradiction. Okay, it's not, wouldn't be the first time or the last time that we have a machlokas between the Sifrei, or Medrash Halacha, and the Gemara. That's what some suggest, that there was a machlokas. There are a number of different other approaches to it. Some say there's a difference when you're presenting the argument within Beis Din. Did you raise the Shaila when you're a member of the Beis Din? That's what some discuss. Or is it a mistake? You simply, what we call that sometimes, a judgment call. Sometimes it's not so black and white. You thought that that they were wrong, but it's only a judgment call. It's not so black and white. There are many different approaches to it. But what I want to share with you this evening in terms of the practice, and tonight's practice in Pshat, is of Chana Wasserman. In one of his essays, Chana Wasserman was the primary Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. He was later murdered by the Nazis. So the Chana Wasserman writes in his Sefer, an article or an essay called Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, who discusses many issues relating to the right of Rabbanim to legislate. So he said that it's not a question of a mistake. When they say right is left is right, it's not a mistake. That's not what the Medrash and the Sefrei means at all. That's not Rashi Tomer. Not that Bezin made a mistake. Taker, the Mishnah Horiyah says what happens if they made a mistake. They made a mistake, and you know that it's, their information is incorrect, or their ruling is correct, you Taker, not allowed to listen. So what does it mean? You have to listen to them, even if they say what's right and left is right. Not a mistake. But they say something which seems to be completely against what the Torah says. What does it mean? It means that sometimes the Rabbanan have the right to make a legislation, to make a rule that goes against what the Torah says. Yesh koch b'yad chachamim lak or davim in ha-Torah b'shev al-taisa, we assume. The chachamim sometimes have the right to negate a Torah law, not actively. They can't tell you actively, that's how we assume in the Bible, they can't tell you actively to go ahead and do something which the Torah says is usur, but they can tell you passively not to fulfill something that the Torah says. And that's what it means. What do you mean? The Rabbanan tell me I shouldn't do this, but the Torah says to do it. So that's like right and left. They're telling me right is left is right. It's not a mistake, but rather they have that right to make such a legislation if they have a good reason for it. So a classic example, which is relevant this year. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh Elul. So in 1 month from now, will be the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And this year, for the first time in more than 10 years, the first day of Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos. And guess what? We're not going to blow the shofar. Okay, even though you look in the Torah doesn't seem to say that you don't blow shofar when Hashanah lands on Shabbos. The Torah says, Yom Truri Elohim, Rosh Hashanah is a day of blowing the shofar. And it doesn't seem, at least according to the way we learn, we'll get to Rishonim in a moment, but according to the Bible, it doesn't seem to make any distinction between whether it's Shabbos or it's a Tuesday, whatever other day of the week it is. So now, according to what I learned in the Torah, see the Torah says, I have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. All of a sudden, the Rabbanan come along and say, no, in a year when Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos, you don't blow shofar. Really? Why? That sounds to me, right is left, left is right. The Torah says, do it, you're telling me don't do it? That's exactly what it means. It says, and left is right, right is left. It's backwards. It's not true. The Torah says to blow the shofar. All of a sudden, the Rabbanan say, now the Rabbanan have a good reason for saying not to blow the shofar on Shabbos. They're concerned that it's going to that people are going to violate Shabbos. There'll be an accidental violation of Shabbos because not every community has an Erev and so on. So I may forget, they're going to carry the shofar to go to someone who's an expert, or someone's going to carry the shofar to blow in somebody's house, or in shul, or whatever. Someone's going to carry the shofar and violate Shabbos. So to protect Shabbos, the Rabbanan made this gzeirah. So therefore, this year and any other year, when Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos coincide, we taka don't blow the shofar. Rosh Hashanah Shacholos b'Shabbos says Uchana Wasman. That is what the Gemara means. That's what the I mean not the Gemara the Sifrei. That's what the Sifrei means. Afila Yomrin. Even if they tell you, even if the Rabbana tell you, left is right, right is left. And they tell you it says in the Torah blow shofar, and they tell you don't blow shofar. That sounds like it's in the can't. How can it be? It's left is right, right is left. The answer is under such circumstances we listen to the Rabbana. That's what it means. Afila Omrin. Yomin shu small or small shu yomin. Situation like that where the Rabbanan have the right to suspend the law from the Torah. Okay, by the way, 2 weeks after Rosh Hashanah, the same thing. 2 weeks after Rosh Hashanah is the first day of Sukkot. Exactly 2 weeks after Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, the first day of Sukkot is also on a Shabbos. So according to the Torah, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to take the lulav and esrog, the arba minim, on the first day of Sukkot. The rest of the week is only the Rabbanan. We're doing it as a zecher l'mikdash. But the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Sukkot is when it's a d'oraisa. The pasuk says, "Ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon." You have to take the lulav and esrog on the first day of Sukkot. Only d'oraisa. The first day of Sukkot, except in the Beis Hamikdash. In the Beis Hamikdash, because the pasuk says, the same pasuk says, "Machtan lifnei Hashem alkechem shivas yomim." So in the Beis Hamikdash, lifnei Hashem, you have to take the Luv and Esrog all 7 days. We take the Luv and Esrog now all 7 days, just as a remembrance, as a zeichel lemikdash. That's the Rabbanan. Only the first day is Doraisa, though. That's only the first day of Sukkot. Is there a Doraisa sitting in the Sukkot is the whole week long? That's the Doraisa of the whole week, but Sukkot Teshu, Shivas Yomim. But Luv and Esrog is only the first day, just like eating matzah. That's only the first day of the first night, actually, of Pesach. You have to eat matzah the rest of the week. You can eat matzah, but you can't eat chametz, but you don't have to eat matzah. But the same thing with Sukkot. The first day of Sukkot is a mitzvah to take the Arba Minim, not the rest of the week on a Doraisa level. This year, we're not going to do the Doraisa mitzvah. We're only going to do the Rabbanah. It's strange. We're going to take the Luv and Esrog starting the second day, you know, Sunday, and the rest of the week we're going to do it like the Rabbanah said. But the very first day of Sukkot, which is when it's a Doraisa, we're not going to do it. Why? The same concern, the Gemara says. Same concern. People are going to forget. They're going to carry the Luv and Esrog to Shul. Shabbos, no Erev, and they'll be in violation of Shabbos, and the Chachamim didn't want that, so therefore they said, don't fulfill the mitzvah. How can it be? It says in the Torah, that's like telling me right is left, left is right. It says, that's what the Sifrei means. Therefore, there's no stira, there's no contradiction between what it says in the Sifrei, what it says in the in the Sefer Rashi quotes here in Parashat Shoftim, what it says in the Mishnah Horis, two different cases. The Mishnah Horis is talking about when the Rabbanah make a mistake, when the Bezin makes a mistake. The Sefer is not talking about any kind of mistake. It's telling you what right the Rabbanah have to legislate, even so far as telling you not to do something from the Torah. Just to end this, a bit of a postscript, I mentioned this is what the Bavli says in the beginning of the fourth paragraph of Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Again, this hasn't happened the way our calendar, quirk in our calendar, we haven't had this in more than 10 years, that Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos. So people aren't just don't remember the sugya. So then that's going to happen a few times in the next few years. That's just the way the calendar works. Anyway, you take a look, the beginning of the fourth paragraph, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the first page, discusses this issue and concludes that this gzeirah was a later rabbinic decree. Some say it was an earlier rabbinic decree, but the Gemara, simple reading the Gemara, was a later rabbinic decree. Don't blow the shofar when a Hashanah lands on Shabbos. Don't take the Luv and Esrog when the first day of Sukkot lands on Shabbos. Even though it says in the Torah, we don't do it in order to protect Shabbos, and we shouldn't come to violate Shabbos. It's just interesting to note that the Rishalmi accepts what the Bavli proposes as a Havamina. The Bavli says, no, maybe even the Torah doesn't insist that we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos, because there are actually two psukim in the Torah, which speak about the mitzvah of shofar. Only two psukim. One is in Parshas Pinchas, I mentioned before, Yom Truy Elochem, a day of tooting, a day of blowing the shofar. The other pasuk in Parshas Emor says Shabboson Zichron Truah. It says Zichron Truah. Zichron maybe implies you have to remember it, but not actually do it. So the Gemara proposes a Havamin, and the Yerushalmi seems to accept it. The Gemara and the Babli rejected it, but the Havamin is that how do you have two psukim? Which is it? Yom Truah, Yom Zichron Truah. I have two. The psukim are contradictory. Is it a day of blowing shofar, a day of just remembering about the shofar? So the Gemara says, depends. When it's a weekday, it's Yom Truah. Right? Then you have to blow the shofar. When it's Shabbos, it's Zichron Truah. So again, the Babli does not accept this Havamina. Okay, and says, no, even when it's Shabbos, it's Yom Truah, but later on they made the decree to protect Shabbos. I just want to point out in conclusion that a little bit we accept that Shita. We accept that Shita of Zichron Truah and Shabbos. You know when? In the davening and in Kiddush. When Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos, we say, V'atitin lana Shon Kenu as Yom HaZikaron HaZeh, Yom, or we say Truah, Yom, and Shabbos says Zichron Truah. We do mention that distinction in the davening and in the kiddush. You see, pay attention to the kiddush and davening. We actually say when it's Shabbos, you add the word zichron truah. So that opinion, while rejected in terms of the source for not blowing the shofar when Shabbos ends Rosh Hashanah, it was accepted to some extent to point out some difference between Shabbos and weekday insofar as our anhaga, our practice in the davening and the kiddush. We don't refer to it as yom truah, but rather as zichron truah. Okay, ad kan the practice. In terms of pshat, it's interesting. We find towards the beginning of the Seder, a prohibition in Parsha Shoftim to serve God to build a matzeva. A matzeva is a type of altar. So it says you're not allowed to build a matzeva. And it's clear even if you're using it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, you can't serve idols on it, but you're not even allowed to build a matzeva, a private altar, even to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the matter with the matzeva? Okay, what's the matter? So one of the distinctions in a mizbeach, an altar, and a matzeva altar, the two different types of altars, one of the differences in matzeva and a mizbeach is that a matzeva is made out of one large stone. That's a matzeva. Mizbeach is comprised of different stones that are put together. So the Torah is telling us that you shouldn't have a matzeva. You should serve God and bring karbanas on a mizbeach and not on a matzeva. Now, what's the problem? So some suggest this Chassidish Sefer called Mor v'Shemesh. His name was Clonus Kalman Epstein. I'll never forget that because he lived in Warsaw. And I remember I was visiting Warsaw once, and I've been there a few times with leading tours and so on before pandemics. And so I was in the, and I was there for Shabbos. We would take like a walking tour of the city, and some Chassidish guy, not from our group, came up to me and asked me, do I know where the Mor v'Shemesh lived? I said, I don't know. I'm not from here. I don't know where the Mor v'Shemesh lived. And there was another Rav there. They asked him, we didn't know. So I wanted to ask the guide, the non-Jewish tour guide, but I figured she's not going to have heard of the Mor v'Shemesh. I couldn't remember his last name. The chassid who asked me couldn't remember the last name, and the other of them, none of us could remember the last name of the author of the Mor v'Shemesh. So I took a stab. I said, you know, I said to her, I thought maybe she'd know, you know. So I said, there was a rabbi here, Mor v'Shemesh. Oh, she's Rabbi Epstein. she knew. We had three rabbis who didn't know, couldn't remember. Anyway, so in his Sefer, Mor v'Shemesh, he suggests that the word matzeva and the fact that it's one stone signifies completion. I've reached the pinnacle. I've reached it. It's one stone. It's there. Okay. It's the word nitzav, standing. You know, it's in one place. It's there. A mizbeach always implies that there's more pieces, right? There's multiple pieces. There's no one thing that's completed. And he suggests, al derech hadrush, you know, a person's purpose in Avodas Hashem shouldn't be that, now I've reached it. I'm here. I can serve God and I've reached it. I've reached the pinnacle, so to speak. A mizbeach somehow implies there's always more. It's comprised of many different pieces and so on. Okay? Matzeva is one, and that's why the Torah frowns upon using such a matzeva, because that shouldn't be our approach. A matzeva implies, I've got everything there is to get. It's all here. Mizbeach implies that it's complicated, there are many more pieces and so on and so forth. That's his suggestion. The only problem with this suggestion is, and again, the Chazal deal with it, the Avos, right, did serve God on Matzevas. We find by Avraham Avinu and so on, they built by Yaakov Matzeva, they built a Matzeva, okay? The Avos did or serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu on these single matzevas, these single altars. So why was it okay in those days? And it was taka before Matan Torah, it was okay to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu on a matzeva, private altar, and so on and so forth, a matzeva. Okay? Why was it okay for the avos to do it if it's not okay for us? So we have this very nice interpretation that a person should never feel that he's finished and complete. Okay, it's very good. But why was it okay for the avos? So others deal with this question also. Moshe Feinstein, the Sefer Darash Moshe, some of his drushes raises this issue. And one of the approaches suggested over there is that a person who is, a human being is more complex, right? The avos before Matan Torah, so whatever they did was good, right? They weren't commanded to do anything anyway, right? They had no mitzvahs per se. Whatever they did was good, right? The taka, they were complete. Doesn't mean that they couldn't do more, but it means everything they did was voluntary, so to speak. But by us, we're only complete when we have the complexity of all the different aspects of Torah and mitzvahs together, and that's the only way we can reach completion. And you can't ever say that I've gotten to the pinnacle. You know, we find the pasuk in the Navi in Zechariah, which suggests a difference in malachim and human beings. Malachim, the pasuk says, "Nasati l'cha mahalachim mem hey lamed chof yud mem mahalachim." The word holech, the root is holech. Malachim beina omdim ha'ele. Okay, the malachim are called omdim. They're omdim, right? They stay in one place. They don't improve. They don't get worse. They are who they are, right? There's no growth or there's no regression by malachim. Right, Tzrafim omdim mimalo, right? That's what malachim are. They have no freedom of will and free choice and so on. They can't get better, they can't get worse. They're omdim, they're stationary, they're in one place. Human beings are called mahalachim, people who go, who move one direction or the other. So that's what it says. So the others, in a certain sense, were like malachim in the sense that since they didn't have the mitzvahs, since they didn't have the mitzvahs, so they were kind of stationary. Whatever they did was good. Whatever they did was complete. Whereas we have so many mitzvahs to accomplish, a person can never say that I'm complete. And just to elaborate on that point, I think that really it's instructive to bear in mind. You know, again, the avos, things were simpler for them because of their madrega. I'm adding this on now. The Madrega was such that they had a relation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu where it was so obvious, it was so clear that they had to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It made perfect sense and they could intuit things and so on. We're not like that, not only because we have so many mitzvahs, because of the complexities of life, as we are right now, where we struggle to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have so many different things pulling at us from different directions. You know, and that's why the Avos maybe could taka say, Matseva, I'm full, I've reached the heights. And then they could tomorrow reach different heights. The next day, but each time that they got to something, it was an accomplishment. We too accomplish when we do things, but it's incomplete. We know we have to go further. We know that even if I excel in this mitzvah, tomorrow I have to excel in that mitzvah. I reach this madrega of a relation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tomorrow I have to reach a different madrega with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's never complete. And it requires the putting together of so many other things. And I would just add that it also perhaps for us requires the participation or the involvement of other people. The Avos really had no support system. Right? The Avos were Echarei Avram. Right? Who Avram? Avram was called Avram HaIvri, okay? Ivri, that's Ivri, right? Avram HaIvri, that's, and then we took that name after that, the Hebrews, right? What does Ivri mean? So the Medrash has three different interpretations of what Ivri means. Some say it goes by his family, it's like a last name. He was a descendant of Aver, Shemin Aver. Ivri means a descendant of Aver. Okay, he was Ivri, right? He was from this and his family, from the Aver family. Others say it had to do with where he came from. He came from Aver Hanor. He came from the other side of the river. He came from, you know, in the olden days, it wasn't too common that people traveled and moved from one place to another. Like today, people who live in the Skimmery for 10 years, they move somewhere else. Okay, people travel around. In those days, people didn't travel around most of the time. And that was most of history till, I guess, age of exploration or maybe industrial revolution, you know, people are born, grew up, lived and died in the same, you know, the same town. Who traveled? It was not safe to travel. It was not practical to travel for most people. So Avram, who traveled from Aram Naharaim, he came to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan. He was called Avram Ivri, the guy who traveled Me'eber Lanar from the other place. He traveled from someplace else. But the third interpretation is that Aver means on the other side. He was on the other side of the whole world. He had one philosophy and nobody believed him. Nobody accepted it, right? He was on one side philosophically and everyone else on the other side, right? So therefore, for Avram Avinu, so he, Taka, was alone. He didn't have, and Yitzhak Yaakov also didn't really have a support system. So therefore, they could worship on a matzeva. We, in order to survive, we live as a community, right? People, again, they have individual obligations. You have to keep the individual obligations regardless of where you are, and even if you're not with a tzibur. But we function much more successfully. And indeed, many aspects of our religious behavior depend upon the tzibur. Tefillah b'tzibur, right? There's a difference between Torah. Every person has to daven, even if you're by yourself, but there's a qualitative difference between a person davening by himself and tefillah b'tzibur. Certain things you can't do unless you daven with a tzibur, right? In a minyan and so on. And many things like would be rovam hadras melech. The more people, the greater. So that's why our mizbeach has to be comprised of many, many different stones together. Because what makes me an observant Jew, what makes me a religious Jew, is not just myself, but rather me as part of a greater whole. Maybe that wasn't the same case in the days of the Avos. I think it's something to ponder. Okay, you can wonder why Matzeva became also. The truth is, I mean, on a simple level, you know, Matzeva became also because the non-Jews used it, something which originally was mutter, and then the non-Jews took it over, so we stay away from it. That's how some of the Achronim write, and this is not the Halacha section, but some Achronim write that that's why we don't daven with outstretched hands. You know, we sometimes find that the emotion, they want to daven, they stretch out their hands. Right? The stretcher, we don't do that. That's how the Be'er Sheva, other Achronim, we don't do that anymore because that practice was taken over by the non-Jews. So when the non-Jews take over practice, then we avoid it, even if it was originally okay. But that's, you know, from a practical point of view. But from the Drush point of view, the idea of a matzeva being one stone, right? I've reached the point. I've gotten here. I'm one. I'm here. I'm one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we're not allowed to say. We always have to recognize that we have to go further. And I'll conclude by noting, when it comes to the Mizbeach, the Torah says in the end of Parshas Yisro that in order to get to the top, the Mizbeach was very high. In order to get to the top of the Mizbeach, you had to have a ramp. Why can't you have steps? What do you have to have a ramp for? So the Torah gives a reason, because when you walk up steps, especially if you pull your leg in a certain way, so it exposes parts of the body and so on, disrespectful. Okay, so that's what it says at the very end, the very last pasuk of Parshas Yisro. But another reason is, you know, the nature of a ramp is such that you can never stay on the same level for too long, especially with the steep ramp. You're a step, you have 10 steps, you can walk up to the fifth step and stop. It's level, it's flat, you can stay where you are. A ramp, either you're going up or you're going back. Right? You can balance yourself a little while, but after a while, you're going to start sliding back or you're going forward. And that's the nature of our relation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It has to be constant, like I said before, Malchim, we're moving. Either moving forward or moving backwards. And that's how we serve our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the notion of Mizbeach also. That it's a place we have to move forward. Otherwise, if we don't move forward, we're going to end up moving backwards. And so the Torah tells us, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want Matzevas, he wants a Mizbeach, and he wants a Mizbeach where there's a ramp to symbolize that Avodas Hashem, we have to constantly be moving forward. I wish everybody a Guten Shabbos. Yeah.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos. Sorry I was late.